Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Dream Master by Roger Zelazny. Narrated by George Newbern. 1. Lovely as it was, with the blood and all, Render could sense that it was about to end. Therefore, each microsecond would be better off as a minute, he decided, and perhaps the temperature should be increased. Somewhere, just at the periphery of everything, the darkness halted its constriction. Something, like a crescendo of subliminal thunders, was arrested at one raging note. That note was a distillate of shame and pain and fear. The forum was stifling. Caesar cowered outside the frantic circle, his forearm covered his eyes, but it could not stop the seeing. Not this time. The senators had no faces, and their garments were spattered with blood. All their voices were like the cries of birds. With an inhuman frenzy, they plunged their daggers into the fallen figure. All that is but Render. The pool of blood in which he stood continued to widen. His arm seemed to be rising and falling with a mechanical regularity, and his throat might have been shaping bird cries, but he was simultaneously apart from and part of the scene. For he was Render, the Shaper. Crouched, anguished, and envious, Caesar wailed his protests. "You have slain him! You have murdered Marcus Antonius, a blameless, useless fellow!" Render turned to him, and the dagger in his hand was quite enormous and quite gory. "Aye," said he. The blade moved from side to side. Caesar, fascinated by the sharpened steel, swayed to the same rhythm. "Why?" he cried. "Why?" "Because," answered Render, "he was a far nobler Roman than yourself." "You lie! It is not so!" Render shrugged and returned to the stabbing. "It is not true!" screamed Caesar. "Not true!" Render turned to him again and waved the dagger. Puppet-like, Caesar mimicked the pendulum of the blade. "Not true?" Render smiled. "And who are you to question an assassination such as this? You are no one. You detract from the dignity of this occasion. Be gone!" Jerkily, the pink-faced man rose to his feet, his hair half-wispy, half-wet-plastered, a disarray of cotton. He turned, moved away, and as he walked, he looked back over his shoulder. He had moved far from the circle of assassins, but the scene did not diminish in size. It retained an electric clarity. It made him feel even further removed, ever more alone and apart. Render rounded a previously unnoticed corner and stood before him, a blind beggar. Caesar grasped the front of his garment. "Have you an ill omen for me this day?"
"Beware," jeered Render.
"Yes, yes," cried Caesar. "Beware. That is good."
"Beware what?"
"The Ides."
"Yes, the Ides."
"Of October."
He released the garment. "What is that you say? What is October?"
"A month."
"You lie. There is no month of October."
"And that is the date noble Caesar need fear, the non-existent time, the never-to-be-calendared occasion."
Render vanished around another sudden corner. "Wait! Come back!" Render laughed, and the forum laughed with him. The bird cries became a chorus of inhuman jeers. "You mock me!" wept Caesar. The forum was an oven, and the perspiration formed like a glassy mask over Caesar's narrow forehead, sharp nose, chinless jaw. "I want to be assassinated, too," he sobbed. "It isn't fair." And Render tore the forum and the senators and the grinning corpse of Antony to pieces and stuffed them into a black sack with the unseen movement of a single finger. And last of all went Caesar. Charles Render sat before the 90 white buttons and the 2 red ones, not really looking at any of them. His right arm moved in its soundless sling across the lap-level surface of the console, pushing some of the buttons, skipping over others, moving on, retracing its path to press the next in the order of the recall series. Sensations throttled, emotions reduced to nothing. Representative Erickson knew the oblivion of the womb. There was a soft click. Render's hand had glided to the end of the bottom row of buttons, an act of conscious intent. Will, if you like, was required to push the red button. Render freed his arm and lifted off his crown of Medusa hair leads and micro-miniature circuitry. He slid from behind his desk couch and raised the hood. He walked to the window and transpared it, fingering forth a cigarette. 1 minute in the row womb, he decided, no more. This is a crucial one. Hope it doesn't snow till later. These clouds look mean. It was smooth yellow trellises and high towers, glassy and gray, all smoldering into evening under a shale-colored sky. The city was squared volcanic islands, glowing in the end-of-day light, rumbling deep down under the earth. It was fat, incessant rivers of traffic, rushing. Render turned away from the window and approached the great egg that lay beside his desk, smooth and glittering. It threw back a reflection that smashed all aquilinity from his nose, turned his eyes to gray saucers, transformed his hair into a light-streaked skyline. His reddish necktie became the wide tongue of a ghoul. He smiled, reached across the desk. He pressed the second red button. With a sigh, the egg lost its dazzling opacity, and a horizontal crack appeared about its middle. Through the now transparent shell, Render could see Erickson grimacing, squeezing his eyes tight, fighting against a return to consciousness in the thing it would contain. The upper half of the egg rose vertical to the base, exposing him knobby and pink on half shell. When his eyes opened, he did not look at Render. He rose to his feet and began dressing. Render used this time to check the row womb. He leaned back across his desk and pressed the buttons. Temperature control, full range, check. Exotic sounds, he raised the earphone. Check on bells, on buzzes, on violin notes and whistles, on squeals and moans, on traffic noises and the sound of surf. Check on the feedback circuit, holding the patient's own voice, trapped earlier in analysis. Check on the sound blanket, the moisture spray, the odor banks. Check on the couch agitator and the colored lights, the taste stimulants. Render closed the egg and shut off its power. He pushed the unit into the closet, palmed shut the door. The tapes had registered a valid sequence. Sit down, he directed Erickson. The man did so, fidgeting with his collar. You have full recall, said Render, so there's no need for me to summarize what occurred. Nothing can be hidden from me. I was there. Erickson nodded. The significance of the episode should be apparent to you. Erickson nodded again, finally finding his voice.
But was it valid? He asked. I mean, you constructed the dream and you controlled it all the way. I didn't really dream it in the way I would normally dream. Your ability to make things happen stacks the deck for whatever you're going to say, doesn't it?
Render shook his head slowly, flicked an ash into the southern hemisphere of his globe-made ashtray, and met Erickson's eyes. It is true that I supplied the format and modified the forms. You, however, filled them with an emotional significance, promoted them to the status of symbols corresponding to your problem. If the dream was not a valid analog, it would not have provoked the reactions it did. It would have been devoid of the anxiety patterns which were registered on the tapes. You have been in analysis for many months now, he continued, and everything I have learned thus far serves to convince me that your fears of assassination are without any basis in fact. Erickson glared. Then why the hell do I have them? Because, said Render, you would like very much to be the subject of an assassination. Erickson smiled, then his composure beginning to return.
"I assure you, Doctor, I have never contemplated suicide, nor have I any desire to stop living."
He produced a cigar and applied a flame to it. His hand shook. "When you came to me this summer," said Render, "you stated that you were in fear of an attempt on your life. You were quite vague as to why anyone should want to kill you."
"My position? You can't be a representative as long as I have and make no enemies."
"Yet," replied Render, "it appears that you have managed it. When you permitted me to discuss this with your detectives, I was informed that they could unearth nothing to indicate that your fears might have any real foundation. Nothing."
"They haven't looked far enough or in the right places. They'll turn up something."
"I'm afraid not."
"Why?"
"Because, I repeat, your feelings are without any objective basis. Be honest with me. Have you any information whatsoever indicating that someone hates you enough to want to kill you?"
"I receive many threatening letters."
"As do all representatives. And all of those directed to you during the past year have been investigated and found to be the work of cranks. Can you offer me one piece of evidence to substantiate your claims?" Erickson studied the tip of his cigar.
"I came to you on the advice of a colleague," he said. "Came to you to have you poke around inside my mind, to find me something of that sort, to give my detective something to work with. Someone I've injured severely, perhaps, or some damaging piece of legislation I've dealt with."
"And I found nothing," said Render. "Nothing, that is, but the cause of your discontent. Now, of course, you are afraid to hear it, and you are attempting to divert me from explaining my diagnosis."
"I am not!"
"Then listen. You can comment afterwards if you want, but you poked and dawdled around here for months, unwilling to accept what I presented to you in a dozen different forms. Now, I'm going to tell you outright what it is, and you can do what you want about it."
"Fine."
"First," he said, "you would like very much to have an enemy or enemies."
"Ridiculous!"
"Because it is the only alternative to having friends."
"I have lots of friends."
"Because nobody wants to be completely ignored, to be an object for whom no one has really strong feelings. Hatred and love are the ultimate forms of human regard. Lacking one and unable to achieve it, you sought the other. You wanted it so badly that you succeeded in convincing yourself it existed. But there's always a psychic price tag on these things. Answering a genuine emotional need with a body of desire surrogates does not produce real satisfaction, but anxiety, discomfort, because in these matters the psyche should be an open system. You did not seek outside yourself for human regard. You were closed off. You created that which you needed from the stuff of your own being. You were a man very much in need of strong relationships with other people."
"Manure!"
"Take it or leave it," said Render. "I suggest you take it."
"I've been paying you for half a year to help me find out who wants to kill me. Now you sit there and tell me I made the whole thing up to satisfy a desire to have someone hate me?"
"Hate you or love you. That's right."
"It's absurd. I meet so many people that I carry a pocket recorder and a lapel camera just so I can recall them all."
"Meeting quantities of people is hardly what I was speaking of. Tell me, did that dream sequence have a strong meaning for you?" Erickson was silent for several tickings of the huge wall clock.
"Yes," he finally conceded, "it did. But your interpretation of the matter is still absurd.
Granting, though, just for the sake of argument, that what you say is correct, what would I do to get out of this bind?" Render leaned back in his chair. "Rechannel the energies that went into producing the thing. Meet some people as yourself, Joe Erickson, rather than Representative Erickson. Take up something you can do with other people, something non-political and perhaps somewhat competitive, and make some real friends, or enemies, preferably the former. I've encouraged you to do this all along."
"Then tell me something else."
"Gladly.
Assuming you are right, why is it that I am neither liked nor hated, and never have been? I have a responsible position in the legislature. I meet people all the time. Why am I so neutral a thing?
Highly familiar now with Erickson's career, Render had to push aside his true thoughts on the matter, as they were of no operational value. He wanted to cite him Dante's observations concerning the Tremors. Those souls who denied heaven for their lack of virtue were also denied entrance to hell for a lack of significant vices. In short, the ones who trimmed their sails to move them with every wind of the times, who lacked direction, who were not really concerned toward which ports they were pushed. Such was Erickson's long and colorless career of migrant loyalties, of political reversals. Render said, "More and more people find themselves in such circumstances these days. It is due largely to the increasing complexity of society and the depersonalization of the individual into a sociometric unit. Even the act of cathecting toward other persons has grown more forced as a result. There are so many of us these days." Erickson nodded, and Render smiled inwardly. Sometimes the gruff line and then the lecture.
"I've got the feeling you could be right," said Erickson. "Sometimes I do feel like what you just described, a unit, something depersonalized."
Render glanced at the clock.
"What you choose to do about it from here is, of course, your own decision to make.
I think you'd be wasting your time to remain in analysis any longer.
We are now both aware of the cause of your complaint. I can't take you by the hand and show you how to lead your life. I can indicate, I can commiserate, but no more deep probing.
Make an appointment as soon as you feel a need to discuss your activities and relate them to my diagnosis."
"I will," Erickson nodded. "And damn that dream, it got to me. You can make them seem as vivid as waking life. More vivid. It may be a long while before I can forget it."
"I hope so."
"Okay, doctor."
He rose to his feet, extended a hand.
"I'll probably be back in a couple weeks. I'll give this socializing a fair try."
He grinned at the word he normally frowned upon.
"In fact, I'll start now. May I buy you a drink around the corner downstairs?"
Render met the moist palm, which seemed as weary of the performance as a lead actor in too successful a play. He felt almost sorry as he said, "Thank you, but I have an engagement." Render helped him on with his coat then, handed him his hat, saw him to the door.
"Well, good night."
"Good night."
As the door closed soundlessly behind him, Render recrossed the dark astrakhan to his mahogany fortress and flipped his cigarette into the southern hemisphere.
He leaned back in his chair, hands behind his head, eyes closed. Of course, it was more real than life, he informed no one in particular. I shaped it. Smiling, he reviewed the dream sequence, step by step, wishing some of his former instructors could have witnessed it. It had been well constructed and powerfully executed, as well as being precisely appropriate for the case at hand. But then, he was Render, the Shaper, one of the 200 or so special analysts whose own psychic makeup permitted them to enter into neurotic patterns without carrying away more than an aesthetic gratification from the mimesis of aberrance. A sane hatter. Render stirred his recollections. He had been analyzed himself, analyzed and passed upon as a granite-willed, ultra-stable outsider, tough to weather the basilisk gaze of a fixation, walk unscathed amidst the chimerae of perversions, force dark Mother Medusa to close her eyes before the caduceus of his art. His own analysis had not been difficult. 9 years before, it seemed much longer, he had suffered a willing injection of Novocaine into the most painful area of his spirit. It was after the auto wreck, after the death of Ruth and of Miranda, their daughter, that he had begun to feel detached. Perhaps he did not want to recover certain empathies. Perhaps his own world was now based upon a certain rigidity of feeling. If this was true, He was wise enough in the ways of the mind to realize it, and perhaps he had decided that such a world had its own compensations. His son Peter was now 10 years old. He was attending a school of quality, and he penned his father a letter every week. The letters were becoming progressively literate, showing signs of a precociousness of which Render could not but approve. He would take the boy with him to Europe in the summer. As for Jill DeVille, what a luscious, ridiculous name, he loved her for it, she was growing, if anything, more interesting to him. He wondered if this was an indication of early middle age. He was vastly taken by her unmusical nasal voice, her sudden interest in architecture, her concern with the unremovable mole on the right side of her otherwise well-designed nose. He should really call her immediately and go in search of a new restaurant. For some reason, though, he did not feel like it. It had been several weeks since he had visited his club, the Partridge and Scalpel, and he felt a strong desire to eat from an oaken table, alone, in the split-level dining room with the three fireplaces beneath the artificial torches and the boar's heads like gin ads. So, he pushed his perforated membership card into the phone slot on his desk, and there were two buzzes behind the voice screen.
"Hello, Partridge and Scalpel," said the voice. "May I help you?"
"Charles Render," he said. "I'd like a table in about half an hour."
"How many will there be?"
"Just me."
"Very good, sir. Half an hour, then. That's Render, R-E-N-D-E-R?"
"Right."
"Thank you."
He broke the connection, rose from his desk. Outside, the day had vanished. The monoliths and the towers gave forth their own light now. A soft snow like sugar was sifting down through the shadows and transforming itself into beads on the windowpane. Render shrugged into his overcoat, turned off the lights, locked the inner office. There was a note on Mrs. Hedge's blotter. "Miss DeVille called," it said. He crumpled the note and tossed it into the waste chute. He would call her tomorrow and say he had been working until late on his lecture. He switched off the final light, clapped his hat onto his head, and passed through the outer door, locking it as he went. The drop took him to the sub-sub-cellar where his auto was parked. It was chilly in the sub-sub, and his footsteps seemed loud on the concrete as he passed among the parked vehicles. Beneath the glare of the naked lights, his S7 spinner was a sleek gray cocoon from which it seemed turbulent wings might at any moment emerge. The double row of antennae, which fanned forward from the slope of its hood, added to this feeling. Render thumbed open the door. He touched the ignition, and there was the sound of a lone bee awakening in a great hive. The door swung soundlessly shut as he raised the steering wheel and locked it into place. He spun up the spiral ramp and came to a rolling stop before the big overhead. As the door rattled upward, he lighted his destination screen and turned the knob that shifted the broadcast map. Left to right, top to bottom, section by section, he shifted it, until he located the portion of Carnegie Avenue he desired. He punched out its coordinates and lowered the wheel. The car switched over to monitor and moved out onto the highway marginal. Render lit a cigarette. Pushing his seat back into the center space, he left all the windows transparent. It was pleasant to half recline and watch the oncoming cars drift past him like swarms of fireflies. He pushed his hat back on his head and stared upward. He could remember a time when he had loved snow, when it had reminded him of novels by Thomas Mann and music by Scandinavian composers. In his mind now, though, there was another element from which it could never be wholly dissociated. He could visualize so clearly the eddies of milk-white coldness that swirled about his old manual steer auto, flowing into its fire-charred interior to re-whiten that which had been blackened. So clearly, as though he had walked toward it across a chalky lake bottom, it the sunken wreck and he the diver unable to open his mouth to speak for fear of drowning. And he knew whenever he looked upon falling snow that somewhere skulls were whitening. But 9 years had washed away much of the pain, and he also knew that the night was lovely.
He was sped along the wide, wide roads, shot across high bridges, their surfaces slick and gleaming beneath his lights, was woven through frantic clover leaves and plunged into a tunnel, whose dimly glowing walls blurred by him like a mirage. Finally, he switched the windows to opaque and closed his eyes. He could not remember whether he had dozed for a moment or not, which meant he probably had. He felt the car slowing, and he moved the seat forward and turned on the windows again. Almost simultaneously, the cutoff buzzer sounded. He raised the steering wheel and pulled into the parking dome, stepped out onto the ramp, and left the car to the parking unit, receiving his ticket from that box-headed robot which took its solemn revenge on mankind by sticking forth a cardboard tongue at everyone it served. As always, the noises were as subdued as the lighting. The place seemed to absorb sound and convert it into warmth, to lull the tongue with aromas strong enough to be tasted, to hypnotize the ear with the vivid crackle of the triple hearths. Render was pleased to see that his favorite table in the corner off to the right of the smaller fireplace had been held for him. He knew the menu from memory, but he studied it with zeal as he sipped a Manhattan and worked up an order to match his appetite. Shaping sessions always left him ravenously hungry.
Dr. Render?
Yes, he looked up.
Dr. Shallot would like to speak with you, said the waiter.
I don't know anyone named Shallot, he said. Are you sure he doesn't want Bender? He's a surgeon from Metro who sometimes eats here. The waiter shook his head.
No, sir. Render. See here?
He extended a 3x5 card on which Render's full name was typed in capital letters.
Dr. Shallot has dined here nearly every night for the past 2 weeks, he explained, and on each occasion has asked to be notified if you came in.
Hmm, mused Render. That's odd. Why didn't he just call me at my office? The waiter smiled and made a vague gesture. Well, tell him to come on over, he said, gulping his Manhattan, and bring me another of these.
Unfortunately, Dr. Shallot is blind, explained the waiter. It would be easier if you...
All right, sure. Render stood up, relinquishing his favorite table with a strong premonition that he would not be returning to it that evening.
Lead on.
They threaded their way among the diners, heading up to the next level. A familiar face said hello from a table set back against the wall, and Render nodded a greeting to a former seminar pupil whose name was Jergens or Jerkins or something like that. He moved on into the smaller dining room, wherein only two tables were occupied. No, three. There was one set in the corner at the far end of the darkened bar, partly masked by an ancient suit of armor. The waiter was heading him in that direction. They stopped before the table, and Render stared down into the darkened glasses that had tilted upward as they approached. Dr. Shallot was a woman, somewhere in the vicinity of her early 30s. Her low bronze bangs did not fully conceal the spot of silver, which she wore on her forehead like a caste mark. Render inhaled, and her head jerked slightly as the tip of his cigarette flared. She appeared to be staring straight up into his eyes. It was an uncomfortable feeling, even knowing that all she could distinguish of him was that which her minute photoelectric cell transmitted to her visual cortex over the hair-fine wire implants attached to that oscillator converter. In short, the glow of his cigarette.
Dr. Shallot, this is Dr. Render, the waiter was saying.
Good evening, said Render.
Good evening, she said. My name is Eileen, and I've wanted very badly to meet you.
He thought he detected a slight quaver in her voice.
Will you join me for dinner?
My pleasure, he acknowledged, and the waiter drew out the chair. Render sat down, noting that the woman across from him already had a drink. He reminded the waiter of his second Manhattan. Have you ordered yet? He inquired.
No.
And two menus, he started to say, then bit his tongue.
Only one, she smiled.
Make it none, he amended, and recited the menu. They ordered. Then,
do you always do that?
What?
Carry menus in your head?
Only a few, he said, for awkward occasions. What was it you wanted to see, talk to me about?
You're a neuroparticipant therapist, she stated. A shaper.
And you are?
A resident in psychiatry at State Psych. I have a year remaining.
You knew Sam Riskam then?
Yes. He helped me get...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?